minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, including the one vegetarian that emailed me yesterday, you bastard, you dumb turd. How's that grab you? Unbelievable sometimes. Good morning, Mark Riley. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man.
I'm not getting personal, but you know what I mean? Some people, they don't stay up with the conversation. They jump right into the middle of the conversation, make assumptions. This guy writes me an email, Kalo, writes me an email out of nowhere, you know, after my crisis of conscience in terms of whether or not I should remain a vegetarian or go back to the ways of meat. And it wasn't even all meat. It was just maybe a turkey sandwich here and there. So I don't have to overbean myself to death or get sick of tofu. I'm in
overbean.
You can overbean yourself. Yeah, it's called being beaned.
Legume fever.
You enter a legume-induced lethargy. All right, you know, and I'm trying to do the right thing because I think the meat industry is bad and health. There are health issues. I've talked about it. Have I not talked about it on this show over and over again? So, of course, me, I go. I know. Go ahead. You have a
this is a cure for legume fever right here.
Riley's hooked on Joel Cohen. He gave him one yesterday. I've never seen someone get hooked so quickly to anything in my life. It was like, bam. At least when I did the bad drugs, it took me a few times to realize, like, wow, you get sick a couple times, but then it's good.
Yeah.
No, Riley's right in on the jolt. So, anyways, of course, I go right into the emails yesterday after the show because I got nothing to do for an hour. I figure let's check in with the people. The first one I read is this dumb vegetarian guy who, or girl, I don't know who it is, or woman, whatever, writes me this letter. It's like, I really don't think you should like trivialize, you know, something that's very important to us with your irresponsible rants about vegetarianism. If you're going to change your diet, maybe you should do a little research. Maybe you should listen to the show a little more. Do you know what I mean? I've been going through this. I have a little crisis of conscience yesterday. I got to take flack from that guy. All right. But I'm okay. It's just kind of stuck in my craw because there's an arrogance. And, of course, he did the one thing that 90% of emailers do. This is a weird trend, Riley. 90% of the people that email us represent the collective we. There are some of us out here who would appreciate, oh, are you the elected representative? Nothing irritates me more because it's such a kind of bullying, kind of like pretentious, condescending way to engage. And they all do it. It's like a symptom of people that email a radio show.
Well, now let me fill in the blanks here, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's not, see, what they say is a variation of the following. I know I don't speak for just myself. Myself and all my friends.
Has it always been that way?
Yes.
Is it? But why?
Since the beginning of the medium, it's always, people always, and see, what's interesting about this is that it's almost a mirror image of what these religion-based jihadists are doing on the right.
Yeah, it's guilt, and it's different, though, because it's not as specific. You're right, though.
No, it's not as specific, but what they do is represent that they represent a much larger block of people than they actually do.
Can't people just speak for themselves? Where's the fear in that? Aren't you enough, little person?
Well,
little person out there speaking for all vegetarians. Look, I'm trying to do the right thing here, and that's not enough because I didn't do it the way that they wanted me to do it. To hell with them. That's what I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you're going to get people who, for whom whatever you do will never, ever, Mark Maron, be enough.
Yeah, tell me about my parents.
You know,
anyways, I grew up with it. What are you kidding me? You don't got to tell me.
You could go for days without food, and somebody would go, I think you really are disrespecting food.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
and
have a little more appreciation. And then on top of everything else, listen, I'm in bed, right? I finally crawl into bed at 8:30 like a child. You know, as we do.
Yes, we do.
And I'm just waiting there. All of a sudden, I hear this noise. I'm like, oh, my God, is there a mouse or is one of the cats in here? And then I'm like, that sounds like water. Sure enough, water's leaking out of my ceiling. Right?
Oh,
so my in the middle, like right when I go to bed, water starts pouring out of the ceiling. And I'm like, this can't be happening. But, you know, it's weird. The sleep becomes so important. I'm like, you know, just put a bucket in. I'll put a bucket under this. I'll deal with it tomorrow because I got to sleep. I'll move everything out of the way. You know, I could sleep with this if I put a pillow over my head. So then I go into the other room. The other bedroom, all right, where my office is, water's coming out of that ceiling. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is the joys of living in New York. It's like if you own a house, you got to go deal with it, you know, and you could...
What was it from? Was it somebody, overflowed the bathtub or something?
No. I don't know what it is. It's the radiator pipe. So, but not leak number one all winter. Not one leak. And then all of a sudden, the one day it gets warm out. And so I call the super who comes up. My super is... He's this huge guy.
Yeah.
He's a Latin dude. He speaks hardly any English, and he's got a shaved head. He looks like Baby Huey, you know.
He comes that joke.
Yeah, right. But he's a nice guy. He's done nothing but help me out, and I try to communicate with him that the ceiling's leaking, which isn't hard because I bring him in. And then he says, "Oh, this is no problem. I'll take care of it right away." And he shuts it off. So I'm thinking maybe we should fix the pipes.
No.
Unbelievable.
Oh, by the way, you know what Chris Lopresto did yesterday.
No. Oh, yeah,
we have to mention the fact that this man went to the Mets opening game yesterday. And, Maron, I got to tell you, from what he was describing, you don't even have to look at the game. You should just go to Shea to have an afternoon out.
I'm going to. When they were talking about it, when they were explaining their afternoon, I'm like, wow, that's what it looks like to have fun. T.W. and Kalo went, and they won, thank God.
Yeah, they won.
But there's so many stories that could go on forever.
Tell about the tarp.
No, you're right, man. There are a lot of storylines going on in the stands and on the field. But one storyline was that there is a hitter's eye in the back of the stadium, and it's supposed to be black.
A hitter's eye. See, now I'm already lost.
All right, don't worry. It's an advertisement, but during the game, when the actual games are being played, it's black so that the hitters won't get distracted.
Yeah.
So it's just an advertisement during the inning, and they can't shut off the advertisement.
Okay.
So the umpires are like, look, can you get someone to do that, you know, shut it off? So no one can do it.
Mm-hmm.
14 minutes go by, and no one can do it.
No one can shut the ad off?
So apparently some guy has the idea to they have a plan B, apparently. So he's thinking as a plan B.
Yeah.
If the little advertisement cannot be shut off, their plan B is a tarp.
Put a tarp over it.
So they unclasp the tarp. And everything. There are four tarps, and the technician he's just unraveling the tarp, and oh, it only goes down halfway. So us in the crowd are like, oh, and so he starts doing another one, and then what happens? It goes down all the way, and then unclasps at the top. It falls all the way off, and we're all booing and chanting. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
Did they finally get it done?
Actually, they finally got the advertisement away, only to reveal another advertisement that was pure white. It was a lot of fun. Pedro Martinez was dancing because he was on the said advertisement. It was a blast.
It's the pregame comedy of errors. But the Mets won, huh?
Yes. I don't know how, but
And nobody got hurt? You don't know how? What do you mean you don't know how? Nobody got hurt. You don't know how. What do you mean you don't know how the Mets won? They played well, no?
By hook and by crook, they won.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we're going to get into today's news. We're going to get into, you know, there's something to be talked about here, Riley. Apparently, inflation has outpaced the rise in salaries for the first time in 14 years, and I think that's something we can hook on the Bush administration. Just another sort of part of their adapt or die policy. It's horrible news for a lot of working people in this country, and we're going to get into it when we come back. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning. It's Tuesday. Feeling okay today. Feeling better than yesterday, I'll tell you that. Once you get going, it's okay. You know,
and I didn't even need the joke.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, man. So just a heads up, I'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio in a few weeks. That's May 6th and 7th for 4 shows at Go Bananas. So all you fans listening to 1530 WCKY, the revolution of talk radio, come check it out. You can go to the tour dates page of morningsedition.com. You can also go to the WCKY website. Look, you know, I'll be out there. I'm just starting to drop the hint now. I've never been to Cincinnati. I'm looking forward to it. Now, here's some bad news. Inflation has outpaced the rise in salaries for the first time in 14 years. This is pretty sad stuff, given that, you know, 47% of the workforce does not get health insurance from their employers. okay? And that is, the number of uninsured Americans in this country is 45 million. Now, these people who are in this situation that, you know, that inflation is, you know, outdoing their salaries, there is absolutely no way, Mark Reilly, to either save any money, to not be afraid of the future, to feel like you are protected in any way, even with whatever the government said. This is what they do to you. The government, this administration, is sort of bullying people into believing that gambling is the only way that they can make a buck.
Now, let's take a snapshot of where we are with this economy in terms of working people, not investors, working people.
Okay.
All right. Corporate America is making goo-gobs of money. How? In part by keeping wages down, by saying to workers, look, you don't want to work here? I got 25 people ready to take your place tomorrow.
For no health coverage, right? You want to unionize? You want to try and get a health plan here? Well, you're a troublemaker. Get out. I got people waiting in line that'll work for, you know, for nothing, and they won't even complain about health care because that's how desperate they are.
Yeah, and what we have are increasing profits and stagnant wages. And part of the reason why wages are stagnant is because the health benefits component of people's wage packages is continuing to grow at an alarming rate. And what the employers are doing is offloading those increases onto the employee. In other words, the more it costs, the higher the employee contribution to his or her health care costs, assuming you even get health coverage in the first place.
And this is just part of this adapt or die strategy of the Bush administration, that you're not going to be able to get any health care where you work. It's almost unaffordable to get health care otherwise. You're going to go bankrupt, you know, personally bankrupt, and you have no protection there. It's a very scary situation, is that, you know, and the other scary thing is that these companies will, like you said before, will take advantage of you because you can. And the unemployment numbers are lies, you know, because the unemployment rate has dropped to a relatively low 5.2%, it says, but that doesn't account for the hundreds of thousands of people that have given up, that have fallen off the rolls.
Well, see, what used to happen, Mark, when unemployment insurance was a cyclical situation and people kept getting it, was that those people stayed on the unemployment rolls longer. Now, because the federal government and most states have a cap as to how long you can collect unemployment. What happens is when you stop collecting, you stop being an unemployment statistic. So in other words, as more and more thousands of people every year get pushed off unemployment insurance, in other words, they don't get paid anymore. They're no longer counted as statistics anymore. They have dropped out of the labor market, so that the number looks good, but the facts tell a different story.
You know, and the scariest thing about all of this, Reilly, is apparently consumption has not stopped, that people continue to buy. So where's that money coming from? It's got to be coming from these credit cards that are jacking up the credit levels, and these people aren't realizing that, you know, there's no cushion. You can't just get into debt anymore, because if you go bankrupt, there's going to be no protection for you whatsoever. You know, and yeah, on top of that, on top of people, just I think their entire mindset has changed. They're saying, look, I got no choice here. In order to survive, in order to live, with gas prices going up, you know, with medical costs going up, they just think that they have to get in debt because they have no other choice. And then when it comes down to it, when they go broke, there's going to be no protection for them, and the credit card company is going to own them.
Well, yeah, and you know, you can quibble with people's decisions to buy SUVs, all right? Maybe they shouldn't have bought them in the first place. But when you have to pay $60 to fill a Denali, and I'm talking about now to fill a Denali's gas tank, which will last you maybe a week, you start realizing that's now $300 a month virtually. And people are not able, if your wages remain stagnant, all right, let's say, and now I'm assuming you're talking about people who are working, but if your wages remain the same in the face of these kinds of cost increases, and in New York, even though maybe most people don't get back and forth to work by car, but still, there have been increases in the transit fare. There are increases for people who do park. You know, there are increases in parking fees. All these things add up, and what ends up happening is people start looking at the job and saying, "Geez, you know what? I don't even have a hope of being upwardly mobile in my particular chosen field of employment. I got to stay where I'm at for the money that I'm getting paid now, because there's nothing else to do.
And God forbid I get sick.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell happens then? I'm afraid. You know, yeah. If I really think about it, what the hell happens to people if they get sick? Then they got to get into more debt because they don't have any health coverage. They got to pay for it out of pocket with their credit cards or however. Then they go broke. The message from this administration in this country today is adapt or die. The number of uninsured Americans is 45 million people. Number of Americans who have lost their health insurance during Bush's first term in office was 5 million. Percentage increase in worker share family health care premiums since 2001, 50%. Average increase in the cost of family health insurance since 2001, $2,700. Decrease in number of jobs providing health insurance since 2001, 5 million. Number of new initiatives proposed by George W. Bush to help more Americans gain access to affordable health care.
Let me guess. None.
Zero.
That's what I thought. See, this is
exact
or die. This is what Mark Morial, who we talked to yesterday, the head of the Urban League, he was talking about this in the context of Black America and the fact that Black Americans, by and large, do not have the ability in many cases to save and invest on the level of their white counterparts. But the bottom line is this is affecting all Americans. This is not just affecting Black people. People all over the country are finding they don't have any money to put in an IRA or put in a mutual fund or any of these sorts of things. Their money is going to making ends meet day to day. For a lot of people in this economy, you know, going to dinner at a seafood restaurant represents a significant outlay of cash.
A once-a-month treat.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, and what he was saying yesterday, too, in the horrendous difference between, you know, the per family earnings, you know, on white family and a Black family, is if the white families did not have inheritance,
yes,
money passed along, legacy, there would be, not as much difference. So a lot of people are relying on, you know, getting their parents' money or having money passed to them or inheriting money from a relative just to get by.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's sad to have to sit around and wonder about your future and go, well, maybe if my mom kicks soon, you know, I'll be all right.
Scary.
Yeah, if my dad kicks, I'll be okay.
And see, even worse, it appears as though if you talk to business people, that more and more kids are coming out of school unequipped. And I'm not talking about ill-equipped. I am saying unequipped.
To do anything.
To do anything in the modern workforce. So where do they end up going, Mark?
Yeah, I don't know where.
The armed forces of the United States.
Where else are they going to go? Are they going to take one of these jobs that don't require them to know anything?
To know anything,
out, and they'll be given the job at a lower salary than somebody who knows how to do it because they're willing to do it.
Yep, and they will become cannon fodder for Bush's Iraq. I don't care how many troops they say they're cutting, they are still going to be sending people's kids over there if they're not equipped to go into the regular workforce. Period.
Yeah, right. Hungry? Join the Army.
There you go. I'm telling you, man.
All right, so when we come back, Riley, what do we got? Talk about Bolton.
We're going to talk about John Bolton, and it looks like he's going to have a rough road to hoe today. Remember that guy Carl Ford we talked about yesterday?
He's
testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today, and it's not good news for John Bolton. We'll tell you why here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Joe, baby!
Yeah, good morning. It's Tuesday. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Today, we are heading into day two of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, their confirmation hearings of John Bolton for UN dude. Ambassador of the UN for the United States. I don't know. It looks to me, hopefully, that this guy's going down. This guy's expressed in the past that he doesn't even think the UN should exist.
Yeah.
He's a loudmouth. You know, he's a conservative ideologue, almost a radical, and he's taken some hits.
And an alleged intelligence official intimidator. That's where...
A bully?
Yeah, a
coercive bully for the cause of the other side.
And Carl Ford, W. Carl Ford, in fact, who worked at the State Department in its intelligence division, is going to be testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today, and it is not going to be complimentary to John Bolton. John Bolton has allegedly in the past pressed for the removal or the firing of different people with whom he disagreed on substantive issues of intelligence. One was this whole Cuban, alleged Cuban biological warfare program, where one guy crossed him, and by the way, he was asked about this yesterday, a guy named Westerman apparently crossed him on this, and the allegation was that Bolton tried to get him fired. What Bolton said was, no, I just tried to get him transferred because he didn't tell me certain things that he told other people. This guy Ford is, I think, maybe the smoking gun.
Aggressively tried to have him transferred.
Yes, aggressively tried to have him transferred.
That's what we're talking about.
Get rid of him!
So before we talk about Rhode Island's Senator Chaffee, I want to hear this sound from Barbara Boxer. Yeah. You know, sort of took him to task because Bolton has said in the past that there is no such thing as a United Nations, and this is what Barbara Boxer is referring to in this.
You have nothing but disdain for the United Nations. Now, you can dance around it. You can run away from it. You can put perfume on it. But the bottom line is the bottom line.
I like her. Yeah. Now, so he's being taken to task by Democrats, certainly. But Chaffee, Senator Chaffee from Rhode Island, is the guy on the fence who might make a difference in whether this guy goes through or not, this guy Bolton.
Okay, this is the scenario.
Yeah.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has 18 members. 10 of them are Republicans. 8 of them are Democrats. A 9-9 split means that the vote, that the nomination does not directly come out of committee. They got to take another vote. Lincoln Chaffee could be the one person that sides with the Democrats, assuming that all the Democrats vote against. Now, you have people like Bill Nelson from Florida. Barack Obama is on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Joe Biden is the ranking Democrat. Paul Sarbanes from Maryland. All these different guys, it's 8 of them all together. They have to stand as a block, and Chaffee has to cross lines.
It's interesting how, you know, like when you go down the list, how, like, over time, my respect for even some of the Democrats has diminished.
Yeah.
Because I used to be like, Joe Biden, yeah. And then after the bankruptcy legislation, I'm like, Joe Biden, all right. But so you're saying to me, if it's tied, they got to go back in, and someone has to say, dude, we're going to be here all week.
Yeah.
Somebody make a call here.
It doesn't right. come out of committee.
But now let's talk about Senator Chaffee of Rhode Island. This guy, he's got a large Democratic population there in Rhode Island who are muscling him to make the right call. So if he cares about whether or not he's reelected again, he's got to, you know, do something along that party line.
Well, here's the deal. Chaffee is up for reelection next year.
Mm-hmm.
John Kerry, his neighbor and colleague from Massachusetts, has started a campaign. He started this yesterday to email Chaffee's office to get him to vote no on Bolton. Chaffee knows that while he's saying publicly that most people in the state of Rhode Island have no clue who John Bolton is. Well, if people aren't careful, they might. Mm-hmm. And that could spell political trouble for Lincoln Chaffee. Now, he might get it from both sides. There's already a Democrat in Rhode Island who's thinking about running against him. But if he votes against Bolton and Bolton doesn't get confirmed, then you might have a conservative challenger to Lincoln Chaffee. Now, could he win? Could a conservative challenger win in the state of Rhode Island? Maybe not. Rhode Island has been Democrat for a good while. Chaffee has essentially been elected in Rhode Island as a Republican because he's a moderate,
mm-hmm.
because he's been willing to cross Bush throughout his first term. So on that level, Chaffee's kind of walking a very, very fine line here. He's got to get Democrats to vote with him or he's toast next year.
It's interesting. I wonder what they're doing to try to coerce him to make this vote for the confirmation.
And see, another person that might be sitting on the fence here, not sure, but might be sitting on the fence, is the former mayor of Cleveland, George Voinovich, who's also on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And if both Voinovich and Chaffee decide to cross, it's done. Now, the problem is Chaffee has said, even after all the tough questioning he gave him yesterday, that he is now, quote, inclined, unquote, to vote for his confirmation.
I like that he's a tease, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love that some of these guys are like, maybe I will. What's in it for me? So now, as somebody who's seen this type of behavior in politicians before, when he says he's inclined, what do you think he's weighing out? What do you think he's waiting for, Riley?
Those emails.
Oh, really?
He wants to know exactly where people are coming from.
In his state.
In his home state. He's going to want to know whether people know who John Bolton is, because right now he's saying they don't, and whether or not this is going to cost him politically. That's the calculus that any politician in Washington uses. What will this vote cost me politically? 9 times out of 10, For example, Hillary Clinton sitting up with and talking about abortion in a less than full choice manner or full choice modality.
Yeah.
She triangulates that that's not going to cost her votes in New York. She can say these things. She's still on record as being pro-choice. But bottom line, she comes with some moderating stuff that's not going to hurt her. So now the question is, for Lincoln Chafee and maybe for George Voinovich, what would voting against Bolton cost in the end? Will the voters rebel? Does it mean that maybe they won't get a committee chairpersonship they're looking for? Or maybe does it mean that Bill Frist is going to come down? Because remember, Bill Frist is a Senate majority leader. He can, under certain circumstances, make life a living hell for a guy like Lincoln Chafee.
But on some level, this is a good time for this to be happening in terms of the hopes that we could have in this guy not being confirmed, because there is a little bit of fragmenting within the Republican Party because of the delay scandals,
yes,
because of things that have been said in support of delay, because of people like Santorum and even Frist to some degree, getting some distance from that situation, that this might be a good time for moderate Republicans to start making their move more towards our side of the thing.
It might be a very good time, and Bolton might be the perfect person for them to make this move on. Bolton is an ideologue. Bolton is a bully. Those two things we've established. I mean, he's made his reputation on being a bully, and now he goes before a Senate committee and says, this kind of pablum, like, if confirmed, I pledge to fulfill the president's vision of working in close partnership with the United Nations. Yo, you said not that long ago that if they blew 10 stories off the building, it wouldn't make a difference. Who do you think you're trying to fool with this nonsense?
Yeah, it's very interesting, because I thought when I first read that quote from Bolton, it was sort of ominous in that it almost had a sort of terrorist ring to it.
No, man, this is pablum. This is Michael Bolton, not John Bolton. He's trying to act as vanilla as possible so he can get himself confirmed by the Senate. And then he'll go out and act exactly the way he acted before.
It's interesting. There were three protesters that interrupted the proceedings yesterday.
Amen to them all.
Yeah, apparently they had pink T-shirts with banners, one reading, "Diplomat for Hire, No Bully, Please."
Yeah, that's from that organization called Code Pink.
Yeah.
They were escorted. I don't know if they were arrested, but they were escorted from the premises.
It's touching, but it's sort of
it's democracy. That's what it is. It's democracy. This is how the people speak.
It's sort of cute, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize it. I'm glad they get in. I'm glad they made the action. But sometimes you just want someone to go, ah! Diplomat for Hire, No Bully, Please.
Let's hope that this tie ends. Let's hope that this vote ends up being a tie. Let's hope that the Democrats stand firm. I mean, I don't know. Again, Bill Nelson from Florida is up for re-election next year. How do we know that? Because it was in that Mel Martinez memo, remember?
Yep. Well, I'll tell you something. If people are waking up to their personal, and like, by the way, I want to congratulate those protesters for getting through. I don't want to trivialize it, because I think it's important that any sort of civil disobedience that is safe and has an impact is certainly, I support it, and I certainly, it was a very nice thing you did.
Amen.
Yes. But I do want to say that if people are starting to wake up to the economic realities of what this country, of the crap that this country is in because of this administration, there's definitely some hope on the horizon, certainly with these scandals around delay. But there is still some concern, deep concern, to the point where I was literally frightened in my bed last night, in reference to that meeting that took place, the JCCCR meeting last week. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Dominion faith, Dominion, reconstructivist Christians, and this is not all Christians, but there is a scary, racist, borderline white supremacist, fascist group that is definitely affiliated with this government, that is definitely, cozying up to members of Congress, and some of the members of Congress are even them. And to me, this is horrifying stuff, because a lot of people say, look, this is a minority in this country. You shouldn't be talking about them. You're making it worse by giving them a voice. But, a lot of people dismissed the Nazis. You know, but when things are economically challenged, when a country is economically challenged, when the chips are down on the money level, people are desperate, they're frightened, they don't know where to turn, this is where hatred, bigotry, and religious extremism takes root on a governmental level. And I cannot, you know, say this enough, that this is not a trivial thing. You know, this is not something we can all turn our backs about. And we're going to talk about the history of it a little bit when we come back, and we're also going to talk about later in the show. We'll be talking to Barry Lynn from the organization
Americans United for Separation of Church and State,
who's going to shed a little light on this conference that I tried to stop last week. I called the CIA, Homeland Security, the FBI, you know, but nothing would stop it. But now we've got some reports coming out about who was there, what was said, and it's frightening stuff, and it can't be trivialized, because this, you know, these radical free marketists of the neocon death cult are completely aligned, at least in some sort of, you know, unholy marriage with a very fanatic crystal fascist zombie brigade leaders. And I don't know where it leads, but I don't want to, you know, if it leads somewhere awful, at least I want to say that, you know,
it leads somewhere awful.
Yes,
trust me.
I wanted to raise the awareness. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
This is the way it goes.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's the Morning Sedition program here on Air America Radio. And that, of course, is the sound of the, it's the sound of the fax machine. There's the fax from the Barbara Streisand compound. Here's a liberal agenda for today. One, if someone mentions the Michael Jackson trial, cock one eyebrow disdainfully and say, who? Two, April is garden month. Take good care of the audit pay and play in your basement. wait. Take good care of the audit pay and play in your basement bay. You dig what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And be careful with those electric bills, you know, those halogen lights. All right. Three, broaden your sources of news by reading items spray-painted on turnpike overpasses. For instance, did you know that CC rules or that Myron has a big one? Hello? All right. Four, as always, monitor the next episode of the Fox TV show 24 for anti-Islamic messages. So far, they're up to 162.
Uh-oh.
Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. You know who else had a mustache besides Bolton? Hitler, man. Hitler. Wake up, sheeple. Mustache equals lies. Audit pay and play in your basement bay. Okay. There you go. So let's talk about this. The Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration, dig that, confronting the judicial war on faith. A number of speakers were there. Tom DeLay by videotape. Alan Keyes. There is a guy that you're talking about, Vieira.
A horrendous constitutional comment. Lawyer, allegedly.
Yeah. Who said that basically he was paraphrasing Stalin.
Yes.
When he said,
no man, no problem.
Yeah. But the guy I'm concerned with, in a lot of ways, is I'm just using this as a lens into the type of people that are involved in this thing. This guy, Howard Phillips, who was a former Nixon staffer, who, along with Richard Viguerie and Paul Weywitch, they were the ones that helped create the moral majority, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that found Jerry Falwell, gave him his big start, all right? He spoke. Howard Phillips spoke at this conference. Now, he is a Christian reconstructivist. And the main guy of Christian reconstructivism, the people, he's dead now, but his guy's name was R.J. Rushdoony. You know about this dude, right?
This guy was off the chain.
He was an apologist for the Confederacy. Most of this stuff, the reconstructivists, and, you know, the stuff that they want to do is totalitarian. They want to operate government on community and local levels with Christian operatives, and they want those people to do sort of the grunt work of the theocracy, you know, the stoning of homosexuals, the hanging of adulterers, and whatnot. But, you know, the vision that these people have for America in the name of the Bible, I mean, it's crazy stuff. If, you know, like something like this, if a woman is raped, the rapist should pay the father a bride price, then if the father approves, marry his victims.
Ooh.
Homosexuals are people they quoted as one of this guy Doug Wilson, who was part of another operation of the Logo School up there in Idaho, mm-hmm. in Moscow, Idaho. They're all connected, and, you know, they want to kill homosexuals. They say that, you know, cursing one's parents is deserving of punishment by death. And they also, being that they are apologists for the Confederacy, this movement is founded in a deep racism.
Yes.
You know, as I'm sure that, you know, some people who have followed this may know, and they're trying to put a nice face on it. But they are really diligently working to infiltrate the government on the lower levels. And I don't know what's going to transpire to take the step into theocracy or American Taliban, but they're out there, and they're organized, and they're writing books, and they're you know, amassing followers with revisionist history in terms of, you know, what the Civil War was about, you know, what, you know, evolution is about. They're trying to change textbooks, and they're doing it in some areas.
They are trying to create biblical law in America. They want to substitute our current system of jurisprudence with biblical law, and they're not playing around. Now, you know, Mark, you started out saying, and this is true, you know, that a lot of people will say, well, you know, there are not really that many of them, and you give them all, you give them more credence by talking about them. The facts are these. These folks thrive on people not talking about them. They thrive on the idea that they organize outside the view of most members of the American public. And then when, you know, suddenly you wake up one day and your school board has five people that think this way on it. And by the way, these folks have as their end game the destruction of public education as we know it.
Yeah, in putting in place Christian schooling, which this guy R.J. Rush Jr. was the champion of. And this stuff is going on in small communities, in smaller towns where the church takes over the town, opens up a school for this type of thought, for theocratic thought. And the interesting thing to me, Riley, historically, is all of this started, the momentum of this movement started at the same time that the free market radicals started. You know, then you just post Goldwater's defeat. You know, when these people started to panic, the free market radicals that became the neocon death cult started to panic and made a decision that they would do anything necessary to protect the free market. And in the same way, these, you know, religious fanatics who want to create an American theocracy, a Christian nation, literally happened almost at the same time. And now they are, you know, married in a very strange relationship. And I don't know who's really in charge. I, you know, there are moments where I'm like, what is the free market guys? What is the neocon death cult have in place to protect us from this other faction that they're pandering to from taking over the country? Really, if there are organized militias and there are state governments that make decisions, you know, on their own volition to create, you know, sort of theocratic armies, I mean, what is in place in this country to really stop that if the wrong people get into power? Maybe I'm, you know, being paranoid. You know, maybe I'm being crazy. But it just seems that the alignment with this government and these religious fanatics is insanely dangerous, and all I can do is hope to God that real conservatives wake up and realize that maybe you are living too much in the Beltway. Realize what's going on out there. You've got mega churches creating armies, creating schools, creating hospitals, creating alternate universes where the facts don't matter, and historical revisionism that is, you know, theocratic in its intent is being distributed. This is scary stuff to me.
Well, Mark, I'll tell you what, if you start looking at where these people get their money, that's where that connection between these free market radicals and the religious right bears biggest fruits. And it is astonishing to see some of the people, everybody from the guy from Domino's Pizza to Steve Chase's wife from AOL, incredible stuff. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to Barry Lynn.
And also I'm going to do the pledge. They've rewritten the pledge, these theocrats.
Yeah, and we're going to run all this past Barry because he knows where the skeletons are here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning, Jeannie says, six past the hour. Six past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great, Mark Maron.
Good morning to all you philosopher kings and queens out there, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. And good morning to our guest who's going to be on the phone here. He's the executive director of Americans United for a Separation of Church and State, Reverend Barry Lynn. How are you?
I'm doing just great, Mark. Mark, nice to be back.
All right, thanks for being with us.
Barry, I'm freaking out. I'm freaking out about this conference. that you were down there.
Absolutely.
Are you the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration? Now, I've been doing a little overview because I did a little research last night about some of the cats who are at this conference. Now, I want to know about this guy, Phillips.
Yeah, Howard Phillips is one of the leaders of the far right, which is getting a little bit less far to the right than we had thought because he's attracting more people from the center now. But Howard Phillips I've known for many, many years, and he's really a subscriber to the idea of Reconstructionist theology.
That was rooted in apologists for the Confederacy. This is a borderline white supremacist Christian group, yes?
Pretty much. He doesn't emphasize that as much because he's a little more public. He's more of a public figure than some of the other people that are closer to the bottom feeding status in that movement. But this guy's got so many things to worry about that he wants to essentially take government down to the basic level. Most decisions, in his view, ought to be made by your local government. They ought to be able to impose the death sentence for what we might call sin in the church, but he would like the Bible to be the guidebook that writes all of the statutes for the United States at every level.
So you're saying that they want to create a totalitarian framework that is basically functioning primarily enforced on local levels and just run out of the center, whatever that would be, in Idaho, wherever they see it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, these characters, Reconstructionists, believe in literal interpretations of biblical penalties. That means stoning to death recalcitrant teenagers, for example, which would mean if they had been in power a generation ago, I suspect the three of us would not be having this conversation.
It's really scary to me because their alignment with this administration, as you were saying, that they the right is actually what we know as the right is moving towards these people. I guess what I'm asking you is the government that we have now, the democracy, is it really under threat by these people? Because a lot of people trivialize this movement.
No, they do. I don't think we're quite ready for the Taliban, but I think theocracy light, as I sometimes call it, is bad enough. In other words, if you start to have the influence that these people have in the current Republican Party, if you can attract, as they would have had Tom DeLay not been at the Pope's funeral, he would have been the keynote speaker at this judicial conference that ran for 2 days last week. If you can attract a Tom DeLay, or for that matter any member of Congress, to come and speak to this collection of far-right characters, we already have the beginnings of a major problem. They even had the chief of staff for Senator Coburn, this new senator from the state of Oklahoma, who led the charge, as virtually everyone was leading a charge, for impeachment of judges. Impeachment of Congress if the Congress doesn't impeach the judges. I mean, it was like the equivalent of Ozfest. It was just impeachment fest over and over and over again. This is the rallying call, and a lot of people seem to believe that's exactly what the Congress ought to do.
Now, should we make anything out of the fact that Coburn himself and Senator Sam Brownback were both scheduled to be there but didn't show? Are they reading the tea leaves? Are they sticking their fingers in the wind and finding that maybe aligning themselves with these people isn't cool?
I think they certainly got a little concerned about the level of the rhetoric, but don't say read tea leaves, because that would be consorting with demonic powers, and I think they can execute you for that.
So. Yeah, I know.
But, yes, I think they did get scared. Brownback's clearly interested in running for president. I mean, he's showing up in places like Iowa and New Hampshire where somebody told me there's a lot of political significance to those places.
I've heard that too, Barry.
Yeah, it's possibly a rumor, but I don't think so. So Brownback is thinking of running, and of course that makes him a little bit more concerned about being seen at this stage with these people.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about this guy Vieira, this alleged constitutional lawyer, who invoked a very strange quote from Joseph Stalin about the judiciary?
Yes, Mr. Vieira is, as you said, a strange character. He's a constitutional lawyer. Anybody with a law degree, of course, can characterize themselves as a constitutional scholar and make speeches. He was very upset because he doesn't like the fact that law, foreign law, is being cited as a reference in some Supreme Court decision. So he drew upon, of course, a gentleman that we all know you should point to for moral authority, and that is Joseph Stalin. He quoted part of Stalin's statement. Here's Vera's, these are the words we got from a tape. Here again I draw on the wisdom of Stalin. We're talking about the greatest political figure of the 20th century. He had a slogan, and it worked very well for him whenever he ran into difficulty. No man, no problem. Well, actually, that's only part of the quote. What Stalin really said was, death solves all problems. No man, no problem. Now, did that mean he wanted you to go out and kill judges? Possibly not, although it's awfully close to the line. But I should tell you, if you don't already realize this, that if the simultaneous track of these guys is not just to impeach judges, if that doesn't work quickly enough, they did, and they want people to continue to pray for their death. One of the last events of this conference was a prayer session in which the lawyer for the Schindler family down in Florida, David Gibbs, prayed what we in the religion business call imprecatory prayers, which are prayers for the death of people.
Isn't that a no-no?
For the death of Judge Greer, the guy who made the initial decisions.
Isn't that a no-no? I would imagine they've defined that so you don't do it. Is that right, Barry?
No. Well, it actually has a long history in the Christian faith. Obviously, many people do not use it. I have been the subject of an imprecatory prayer campaign from a pastor out in California for the past 5 years.
And has that affected your health at all?
Not to my knowledge. But he once, it's a very kind of a weird story, because I was once on CNN with him. His name is Pastor Wiley Drake. That's real. I did not make up that name. Pastor Wiley Drake. We're on CNN together, and he was screaming about gay people. And I said, you know, Pastor, it doesn't sound to me like you like anybody, because you've been praying for my death for some time as well. He sent me a fax back to my office after the show, and the fax said, Dear Barry, I was surprised to hear about the prayer against you. I thought this was just a private matter between us.
That's hilarious.
Talk about chutzpah.
Yeah.
Private matter. He's mere. Well, but these guys, you know.
What's said in the church stays in the church.
Yeah. Well, listen to the prayer. I'll let your listeners decide what this
is. Well, let's do it when we come back from break, Barry. So why don't you hold that thought? It's 14 past the hour. We're talking to Barry Lynn. He is the executive director of Americans United for a Separation of Church and State. We'll be back in a second.
Morning Tradition on the air and online. MorningTradition.com. Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Got to put my dream diary on hold because we're in the middle of a conversation with Reverend Barry Lynn. He is the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. He was at the big conference, the JCCCR, he wasn't there, but he knows people were there. He's got information on it. And this is like Michael Schwartz, who is the chief of staff of Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. I'm going to quote him here. Barry, he says, I'm a radical, I'm a real extremist, I don't want to impeach judges, I want to impale them.
Yeah,
that's the spirit of the event down there, huh?
Yeah, it was also the spirit of the Crusades, as you probably recall.
You were going to share a prayer with us, though, I think, before I cut you off there.
That's all right, because it's not my prayer, but it was the prayer that kind of ended this conference. Listen to this. Father, we echo the words of the Apostle Paul because we know Judge Greer, he's the judge down in Florida who made the initial decision that Terry Schiavo wanted that of feeding tube removed. The Judge Greer claims to be a Christian. So as the Apostle Paul said, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, when you are gathered together with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ, deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh.
Awful.
Yep.
We are talking about
a death prayer to me.
Yeah, prayer. For people who are just tuning in, we're talking about the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration. It was a meeting that was held in Washington. I tried to get it stopped, Barry, by calling the CIA, the FBI, and the Homeland Security place, because I think they're anti-American. I think they're anti-constitutional. I think they're bordering on being treasonous.
Well, I'll tell you, there is a very, very thin line between the destruction of the country and some of the things that they're talking about. Remember the fellow you started to talk about, Michael Schwartz, Senator Coburn's chief of staff, he talked specifically about impeaching even a man who is considered one of the most conservative of all the federal appeals court judges, Stanley Birch, down in the 11th Circuit. But he was the guy who ultimately said that the law passed by Congress that would have moved Mrs. Schiavo's case into the federal courts was a violation of the separation of powers, that the large parts of it were unconstitutional. Because he had the courage to finally say that, and even though he's one of the most conservative judges we've got, he should be immediately impeached. And then Mr. Schwartz went on to say he should serve a long sentence. I don't know if he thinks that when you're impeached, you automatically go to Guantanamo. I don't know what he's talking about here, but let's put it this way. I don't think we want to find out. These people and these ideas would have been considered Looney Tunes ideas even 10 years ago, but
sure.
Now they come back. One person actually advocated that we go to a system of courts where if I sue you, the only effect that the decision has when it comes down, for illustrative purposes, say I win, it affects me, it affects you, it affects nobody else. In other words, if Roe versus Wade were heard today, it would affect Roe, Wade, and nobody else, and the next person who wanted to obtain an abortion would have to file a new federal lawsuit and win that one and have it appealed. I mean, this is complete and utter lunacy.
Barry Lynn, there are some very interesting people that fund a lot of these folks, people that you might not think would be backing them with their dollars, people who are in some cases titans of corporate America, and in fact, some people who profit from the very things that these organizations fight against. What in the world, why would Steve Case's wife, for example, a guy who, by the way, is head of AOL, has made a pretty penny off of internet porn, but we'll leave that aside for another discussion. I mean, why would his wife fund the religious right?
Shame.
Was she in the picture? I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. Look, there are a lot of people, and they don't fund every one of these religious right organizations. I don't know if Mrs. Case supported specific institutions that were there putting on this conference. I just don't know the answer to that. But I think a lot of people in corporate America see a tremendous advantage to this. If they can develop, for example, a market for among this 18% of the people that self-categorizes itself as the religious right, they make a bundle of money. There's a whole culture of sales that are designed just for Christian audiences, and then on top of that, if you can get Christian groups, the 18% that calls itself the religious right, to buy your telephone service, that is a huge piece of the market. In the same way that the religious right has dominance in many of the Republican Party primaries, they can have dominance in big department store chains, telephone services, just by saying, look, these are the good guys. They support us. Now we need to support them. It's the same argument, basically, that Tom DeLay has made to the far right recently. I will carry your water in Congress on all of your kooky ideas, but then when they come up and start messing with my claiming, daring, can you imagine this, that Tom DeLay may be ethically challenged, you have to come to my defense. Phyllis Schlafly made it very clear. He's a friend of ours. She says we're going to have to help him.
Barry, but, you know, like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but at what point does this get away from us? I mean, these people are building, you know, mega churches. They're deluding a lot of people. They're working against, you know, fact-based education. They're working against, you know, so many things that this country is built upon. At what point does business say this isn't worth it? I mean, isn't this alignment a very dangerous alignment? Are they not aware at the impact that these type of people can have on this country if they get worked up in the wrong way or get supported by a militia or whatnot? Am I being crazy?
No, you're not being crazy, but I think you know as well as I do that corporate America is about as short-sighted as it can get. I mean, it's into profits now, not worrying about the future for generations to come. I mean, I'm not saying this about every corporation in America, but I think, I mean, look at the way that companies tried and tried to fight every environmental protection known to mankind until they were literally forced to do it till they couldn't breathe the air either. I mean, now we're looking not just in these collection of issues directly relating to church and state, but to other questions. The religious right doesn't care much about the future because they, in general, believe that Jesus is coming back very, very soon. So they don't have to have a long view. And corporate America has a short view because it looks at a bottom line. So in some ways, ironically, they see things pretty much the same.
All right, what do we do? What can we do?
Well, first of all, I mean, the good news is that there's been a tremendous reaction over the last couple of months for organizations like Americans United. I mean, people just sending in money, forming chapters all over the United States, places that we had never been able to form chapters.
Where can they go to get that information, Barry?
AU.org. Go to the internet, www.au.org. You can get in touch with our field organizers.
Okay, good.
And that's one way to make a real difference. We can get you the information when you need it to do the things you need to do to try to stop this bulldozer.
Great. Thank you, Reverend Barry Lynn.
Thank you.
Great
Thank you.
Talking to you again.
Thanks, Mark.
You
Mark.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Executive Director of Americans United for a Separation of Church and State. You know, we're going to come back. We've got, you know, we've got the Liberal Confessional come up. We've got the, we've also got the Dominionist Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The real one and some rough drafts that led up to that one. You know
really?
What I'm saying?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You got the drafts.
I do. Of course I do. And we'll get the Dream Diary in here somewhere.
Somewhere on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
The home of Elvis Presley. He died on the toilet. Did you know that? Join us next time for the Al Franken Show live from Memphis, Tennessee.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We were just talking to Barry Lynn, the president of the Separation of Church and State.
Americans United.
United against for the separation of church and state. You know, these guys, these Christo-fascist zombie brigades, these Dominion Christians, these Reconstructivists who want to impose biblical law on this country are a real deal. They're the real threat. They are a theocratic movement that has been sort of building for years. They write books. They have PR firms. They have grassroots organizations. They have people like Dan Barton, who is a Republican operative who has written books like Impeachment, Restraining an Overactive Judiciary. He's written a book called The Myth of Separation. These are people that are anti-American, they're treasonous, and they need to be stopped. And they are very organized. And, you know, they're writing books that sound like that. We've got Don't Think of an Elephant. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm not saying that we're running behind here, but I'm saying let's not underestimate this problem. I mean, the Dominion Christians, and this is from an article, and this is, like, not all Christians, so just relax. I mean, if you're one of these people, you're certainly not going to write me a letter and say, hey, quit knocking the Dominion Christians. I mean, this is scary anti-American stuff. But there was an article in Rolling Stone magazine this month. It's a great piece, I think. It's written by a guy named, it's called The Crusaders by Bob Moser. Christian evangelicals are plotting to remake America in their own image. Again, not all Christians, but the ones that are giving you good Christians a bad name. They've got their own Pledge of Allegiance that they write, that they wrote. It starts like this. I pledge allegiance to the Christian flag and to the Savior for whose kingdom it stands, one Savior, crucified, risen, and coming again with life and liberty for all who believe. That is real. I'm not making that up. And we just went to their website. And we picked up some of the rough drafts, which I think, you know, in context, they made the right choice. Here was one. I pledge unquestioning obedience to the gore-soaked flag of the coming angel army. Let the sodomite secular humanists be taken up, taunted, and cast down on the sharp rocks of Homo Beach. One Savior, crucified by Jews in Hollywood, risen and coming again to lead the white Southern soldiers of the cross with life, liberty, and hopefully a glorious death on the fields of Zion for believers. For non-believers, also death, only less spectacular. Amen. Now, I'm not, you know, this, I couldn't make that stuff up.
Yeah.
All right. Riley. All right.
Well, no, you know,
it's very funny little man.
No. The thing about life for all who believe. Think about that for a minute.
Dude, it's
life
scary.
For all who believe. What does that mean for non-believers?
Yeah.
The opposite of
it's
life.
Eternal burning and death and nastiness, whatever the comic book says. But the thing that's... I was up for 2 hours. Last night, freaking out about this. I was doing all this reading on these stuff, and nothing freaks me out more than the all too true conspiracy of theocratic Christian extremists. It scares me.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, there are some black clergy people that have tried to make common cause with these wackos.
Yeah.
And they've been taken to task by none other than Bill Maxwell, who is a former columnist for the St. Petersburg Times. He's currently scholar in residence at Stillman College in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And he wrote a brilliant piece, I guess, in Sunday's St. Pete paper about the what he calls the black church's bad trade-off. In other words, in a lot of these black churches getting down with the Bush initiative,
right,
we're getting down with the idea of you know, opposing same-sex marriage is their mission in life.
We talked about this a lot, Riley.
We
it turns
have
out you've been you were right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, here is what Bill Maxwell talks about, and this is what stands in stark contrast to what these black pastors are doing. These guys are you know, looking to curry favor in order to get money.
Okay.
All right? That's a lot of people do that in America. They may not be clergy people, but that's what they do. The black church has a long and extraordinary history of service to the black community. And what Bill Maxwell says is, in getting off into this gay marriage thing, getting off into the religious rights agenda, black clergy people are ignoring a traditional black agenda, like, for example, this is a report by the Schott Foundation for Public Education. It's called Public Education and Black Male Students, a State Report Card. He's got a list of the numbers of black male graduates, and this is for black males nationally. Cincinnati and Cleveland, Ohio, 19%. Chatham County, Georgia, 21%. Rochester, New York. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Pinellas County, Florida, where the Shiloh drama played out, 24%. New York City, where we are, 26%. Buffalo, 27%. Oakland, California, 31%. None of these percentages are above 34%. That means 60-some-odd percent are not graduating. And what Bill Maxwell says, and he's absolutely right, is that this is supposed to be the historic mission of the black church, to
right.
change those numbers, not to stand up and talk about who sleeps with who. That's ridiculous, given who black congregants actually are.
Right.
But the fact is, he knows they're going for the short money. They're going for this money. Bush has said we're going to open our coffers and, you know, fund all of these different faith-based initiatives. And that's not to knock many of the programs that the black church has started. I know right here in Harlem, there's a program at the Convent Avenue Baptist Church, Historic Church, where they feed hundreds of people every day. It is a great program. It probably deserves some level of federal funding. They don't proselytize at the church. They don't, you know, hand you a Bible. They don't try and espouse a particular religious philosophy. But when you have these kinds of numbers, fewer than 1 in 5 black males graduate from high school with the necessities, college prep courses, and a demonstration of basic literacy, and you're worried about gay marriage?
Mm.
Bill Maxwell, thank you for writing this in an American paper so that people really begin to understand the dimensions of the problems we face in the black community and how some, not all, some black clergy people are not addressing them.
Mark, yep. It's not always being a liberal, as you know.
Oh, no, you're right about that.
We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. And
thank you, Mark.
If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, It's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, ever since that Halberstam thing, I've been feeling a little guilty about my respect, or lack thereof, for old people.
You mean like when Pulitzer Prize-winning author David Halberstam, who was our guest on Friday's show, mercilessly and unnecessarily criticized you for the Mark the Shark bit at length?
Yeah, man, he totally tore me a new one, and he's got a Pulitzer Prize. What's he going after me for? You know what it was, Riley? He just didn't get Mark the Shark. So what? So why? I mean, so I don't know. You know why he did it? I'll tell you why. Because he's 71 years old. He's an old man, and old people are mean.
You think because one older guy attacked you that all old people are mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, you see it all the time. Like, the little old lady lives downstairs from me. I hear her screaming the most vile racial epithets at her television. She uses the N-word all the time. She uses the N-word more than Jay-Z. But when I see her in the hallway, she's always like sweetness and light. Oh, hi, Mark. The daffodils are in bloom. I mean, why are old people so bitter, Riley?
If she's got something to confess, she can come to me. But this is about you, Mark Maron, and respecting your elders. If you're lucky, you're going to be that old someday, too.
Well, not necessarily. You know, science is catching up. I may never get old. I mean, not Halberstam old, anyway.
I see you taking it well, being realistic as usual. I think I have a good idea for your penance.
All right, what do you got, Riley?
You have an old problem, Mark, so your penance is old school. You have to read Halberstam's book, The 50s, to someone in their 70s. Maybe the woman downstairs. You might want to pay extra attention to the part about the civil rights movement. And bring her a few daffodils.
Hey, Riley, can I read her something a little shorter? Because that's a really long book, and I don't know how much time she has. Do you know what I'm saying?
It has to be that book, Mark. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Well, thank you, Brother Riley. Wow, this is, I feel better. If anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We'll take your confessions when we come back. It's 43 past the hour.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Fair America Radio. We got Todd Solondz coming up in the next hour to talk about his new film, Palindromes, which I saw. I've seen most of his movies. I'm about halfway through storytelling. I'll tell him that. I'm going to tell him that I'm about halfway through it. I have a love-hate relationship with his stuff. But right now we're taking confessions in our liberal confessional, 866-303-2270. Let's start with Scott. Scott, what is your sin, Scott, down there in South Carolina?
Well, Mark, good morning to both of you, by the way.
Good morning.
Yesterday I was at work. I work at a music-based radio station here.
Okay.
And I looked out the window, and there was a very well-dressed man walking around looking for a way in the building.
Oh.
I went out the front door, realized who it was, and let him in anyway to do his talk show, Armstrong Williams.
Oh, Scott.
You've done it now, Scott.
Oh, you couldn't have stayed. You couldn't have stayed hidden and just let him scramble.
Man.
Was it your job to let him in?
Well, I was the closest to the door.
Well, there's only, and he tapes out of your studio down there?
No, his family's from down here. So when for the first time actually, he was in town and he asked our management permission to do his show from our studio, and they let him.
Well, there's only one penance, is that you're going to have to, like during Armstrong Williams' next broadcast, you have to jam the signal with our show.
Yeah, there you go.
You
that works.
You know how to do it, I'll be glad to do it.
Do you know how to do it?
I'll go online and find it.
There you go.
Well, thank you, Scott. I hope you feel better.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care. I think that was reasonable.
Yeah, it was reasonable.
Here's one. Jack in Staten Island, what's your sin?
What's up, Jack?
Hi, I'm a lifelong stamp collector, and of course, as a progressive stamp collector, I have Franklin Roosevelt and Paul Robeson and all, but I weakened one day in the post office, and I bought a Ronald Reagan stamp. I tried to tell myself it was because he was an actor, but I still feel guilty.
Well, you should feel guilty, and you know, I'll tell you something. I wish I were a stamp collector. I think I'm a stamp collector. You know, I'll go buy them because they're nice, and I understand what you've done, but it is bad. So, unfortunately, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to use those stamps. Okay, as your penance, you have to use the Reagan stamps, and this is really going to hurt. You also have to use the FDR stamps, which I know are real collector's items, and they're like for a dime, aren't they, those FDR stamps?
Oh, at least, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have to just put the Reagan stamp on and then take your FDR stamps and place them over Reagan.
That's a good idea.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Jack. Hope you feel better.
Thanks a lot.
There you go. That was the penance on that one. You know, I remember those FDR stamps, and that's all he can do for that. That's payback, man.
Yeah, it is.
For those bastards trying to put Reagan on the dime. You can't erase the New Deal, my friend.
Yeah. I don't care what you try to do.
I'm really talking the stuff, aren't I? All right, here we go. Ed in Atlanta, what's your sin?
Hey, Ed.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
All right, how you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. I'm down in Atlanta. I was reading the paper this weekend. I see Eric Robert Rudolph, who bombed and terrorized a bunch of places in Atlanta, getting a plea bargain, and it really got me upset.
Yeah.
Four life sentences he got, right?
Tried, and if he was guilty, you know, I want to see him get the death penalty. I think it's okay to give the death penalty out to serial killers and terrorists.
So you are a proponent of the death penalty. This wasn't out of character for you, necessarily.
Well, let me put it this way.
Okay.
I would only support the death penalty, and this is why I'm mad about it, because to me it gets given out way too often than it should, and it should be reserved for the worst of the worst in our society. And this guy, bombing abortion clinics, nightclubs, the Olympic Park, this is the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of message does it send to, as you refer to it, the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, when we let, you know, a guy who, you know, may be a religious terrorist, you know, off the hook like that?
All right, now here's what I, you know, we were talking about this beforehand, Ed. I will tell you, Mark and I cheated. We saw what you were going to talk about. At first, we were going to tell you to, you know, go to your doctors, get them to strap you down to a gurney, call in a few witnesses, and shoot you up with a placebo so you'd know what it was like. But I think maybe we'll flip that around and maybe have you go to a jail or a prison nearby you, spend a day, 24 hours, day and night in prison, if you got a friend that works in corrections or something, and see if that's really not a fate worse than death.
For four lifetimes.
Yeah, for four lifetimes.
What do you think?
That's interesting, guys.
I don't think we've relieved him at all.
No.
He still thinks that the guy should die. I understand what he's saying, but I think that, you know, in terms of punishment, I don't think it's one of those things that can really be conditional. I think you either have to be against it or not against it.
I don't know if you can be halfway for the death penalty.
What's your feeling on that, Riley? You're pretty strong on the death penalty. You think it's state-sanctioned murder.
I think it's state-sanctioned murder, even in the case of a murderer like Eric Rudolph. I mean, look, he's a lowlife. He doesn't deserve to see the light of day. But that doesn't mean you kill him. That means hopefully you put him in prison forever, and four life sentences sounds like forever to me, and you create a situation where somehow he can make some form of restitution. You know, I have no problem with physical labor for people sentenced to life in prison now.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the chain gangs, those were brutal. But, you know, hard work is, you know, license plates, furniture, whatever.
Okay, well, thanks for your call, Ed. I mean, I understand, you know, it's weird because I get that, too. I'm against the death penalty, but, you know, sometimes
you just want to kill somebody that does.
Yeah, and make an example or, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, instinctually, you know, if somebody has done something so transgressive and so horrible and so demonic, that your impulse, I'm doing the thing. I just found out when I do it, when I'm trying to express emotional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's what it is. I understand. I understand fully. And the death penalty is an emotional issue, especially in Atlanta. I mean, this guy literally had that city terrorized in 96, for the Olympic Park bombing.
Yeah.
I mean, people were like, wait a minute. And remember, that was when they nailed that one guy who was totally innocent? Richard Jewell.
Yeah.
He ended up suing the Atlanta Journal and Constitution because they falsely had him essentially tried and convicted.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to talk about because unless they isolate a guy like that, like Rudolph, you know, who's to say that he's not going to start, you know, networking again or become a hero to other, you know, sort of white supremacists or other, you know, religious fanatics who want to do what he did. I mean,
I understand. Two words. Solitary confinement. Right. At least for one of the licenses.
Jan, listening in Madison, Wisconsin on the mic. What's your sin?
Hey, Jan.
Hi, you guys. It's Jan, the cab driver from Madison.
Oh, what's going on?
Oh, I really feel like crap today because yesterday I had to have a sit-down with my boss, who's a Republican, by the way, and his son, who's a Republican, by the way, and iron out some difficulties, and it required me making some confessions. It was really, really hard, and I feel like I have completely parted company from my normal self.
Okay, what happened?
Both of them are, how do I say this subtly? Jerks.
Okay.
And the concessions I was made to or asked to make to keep my job were to essentially admit that some of their points were right.
In order to keep your job, you had to admit that some Republican points were right.
I was given a lecture about personal responsibility. All right.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, my boss said something about respecting his son because he's going to eventually inherit the business and that's part of the deal and that he's the boss and therefore I have to respect him.
All right, so backward. I'm getting
you're working for Sadis. Okay. That's your problem.
But wait, here's the final irony, okay?
Yeah,
he says to the son, people aren't going to respect you because you're the son. And as soon as he says this, I look on his wall, there's a picture of George Bush.
All right. We'll get your confession when we come back. We're doing the liberal confessions. It's 57 past the hour. We'll come back with Jan's with her penance, and we'll be back with other stuff here on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. We got Jan still on the line, who has made a confession to us and during our liberal confessional segment that she was put in a position where she was forced to kiss her boss's arse, and he's a Republican, and not only that, but she was made to admit that she will try to be respectful of her boss's son, who will be taking over the family business, and she was made to admit that she needs to take some personal responsibility. This sounds like a brutal meeting, Jan.
It was very brutal.
Now, here, unfortunately, your penance is that you are going to have to, because of the arse kissing and the position you were in, and that, you know, I understand you need to do this to keep your job, but not only are you going to have to be nice to the boss's son, you're going to have to actually befriend him.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Now, listen, Jan, I got the ulterior motive here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you befriend this guy, you know, get him to kind of trust you and start saying bad stuff about his dad, all right? And then you really learn where his buttons are, and then you make him work for you.
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
It's a big mind control experiment. I know you'll still be the employee, but if you know his buttons, then you can just make him dance. See, it's just look at it as a weird penance/decoding project where you ultimately win and he becomes your puppet.
Yeah. Whole Machiavellian thing.
What? What?
I like the way you think, but it sounds so much like the other side.
Well, I'm
No, you take him from the other side over to your side.
I'm sorry. Did you want more pain, Jan?
No, trust me.
I'm just thinking, all right, then you know what? Forget the demonic idea of manipulating him. You just have to become his friend, okay? I gave you a chance,
Jan. Yeah, there you go. See, either that or you have all to go to a Madison Scouts rehearsal, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Jan. You guys take care.
Take care.
Bye.
But you know what? So I get now I'm thinking like the other side. I'm trying to help out.
There you go.
Oh, Jen.
She could have done it, too. Maybe. I'm convinced she could have done it.
Of course you can. I don't personally have the patience for that kind of behavior because I'm not that devious. You know, but
I am.
I know you are. All right, well, right now, let's get to this because I didn't get to it early. This is my dream diary from last night because I got to bring it into my therapist this week. I'm listening to my iPod while I'm standing online at the multiplex. I'm going to go see Hotel Rwanda because I hear it's fantastic. Just then, I hear a familiar voice. Mark, it's the iPod. Damn! Why don't you go see Sahara with Matthew McConaughey, Steve Zahn, and Penelope Cruz? The Portland Oregonian says it's surprisingly entertaining. Tune out. I said, because it looks like such a giant piece of crap, that's why. Then how about Beauty Shop with Queen Latifah and Alicia Silverstone? Variety called it a sunny and sassy comedy. I say, no, no. What's the matter, Mark? Don't you like black people? I say, hey, wait, that's not it. It just looks lame, okay? And I really want to see Hotel Rwanda. Is that not black enough for you? Mark, if you don't go see popular movies, you won't be able to talk to your coworkers about them. Without shared pop culture experiences, you'll be alone. Go see Guess Who with Ashton Kutcher. I say, no, I'm not gonna see Sahara. I'm not going to see Beauty Shop. And I'm not going to see anything with Ashton Kutcher, ever. I'm here to see Hotel Rwanda, all right? Let it go. The iPod says, Mark, no one's impressed by your alternative tastes. You're just a misfit who can't relate to other people. And you're not getting any younger. I get up to the booth, and the ticket kid says, which movie? Just then, a jolt of electricity starts shooting into my brain, and I'm like, ow! Oh, God! It's excruciating! You know, it's just killing me, and I finally say, all right, Sahara. I want to see Sahara, and give me tickets for the Ashton Kutcher movie later. And the Charlotte Observer says, this Kutcher's most relaxed and sensitive work on film. The electricity stops, and the iPod says, good, Mark. Now order the super combo. That's three jumbo drinks, a garbage bag full of buttered corn, and your choice of delicious candy. Tune out. I woke up, and my bed was filled with gummy worms. You see what I'm saying, man? How's that grab you? So what? You know what, Riley? I've got these problems. You know, a few.
What? You got no problems.
Well, you know, I get obsessed. I get locked in on certain things that I think will make my life 100% better. Like, you know, right now it's the bike. I need a bike.
Okay.
Okay. I need the iPod thing is getting sort of ominous in my head. It's giving me a dream. I feel I'm on the precipice of buying a one.
Of a purchase.
Yes.
Yes.
A blender. For some reason, I've got it in my head that if I had a blender, then I can make this one thing. And I call my wife, and I'm like, I got to get a blender so I can make the chili sauce. She goes, you have a food processor. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't blend it. It doesn't get it fine enough. So I got it. I'm literally locked on these things, the iPod, the blender, the bike. Serge Gainsbourg, the French pop star who I've been meaning to buy a record of, a CD of, I bought yesterday.
You did?
Yes. I went out and bought a collection of Serge Gainsbourg. And
is
I
that the one that's got him and Bridget Bardot singing
yes.
Bonnie and Clyde?
Yes.
Yes. That's an amazing song.
It's a great album. The guy's great. I can't understand a word he's saying, but I dig the music.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know who ripped him off completely? Beck. You know,
In
the orchestration and some of the mixes, and he actually is part of some of the liner notes, but you can definitely hear that influence in there. So let's leave ourselves some time on the other side of this break, because we are going to get into some stuff that took place here during the Republican convention. A lot of people were thrown in jail,
yeah.
I guess over 1,000, and now there's some information turning up that is, you know, really revealing about the NYPD in terms of, you know, the truth. It's 12 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
800-801-GAME. That's 1-800-801-GAME. Call now. 1-800-801-GAME.
Hey, y'all, prepare yourself. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
And you know, Mark, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Thank God we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator, because we're going to feed it some headlines. Here we go. From the Boston Globe. Bolton denies effort to punish dissenting analysts. Feed that in there. Bolton denies effort to punish dissenting analysts. Translation, Bolton shrugs, says sometimes analysts just disappear. From ABC News, Rumsfeld warns on corruption during Iraq visit. Rumsfeld warns on corruption during Iraq visit. Translation, Rummy calls Iraqi attempts at corruption pathetic, amateurish. From the Associated Press, teen accused of stealing corpse's head from tomb. Teen accused of stealing corpse's head from tomb. Translation, race for first human clone grows increasingly aggressive. Yes. That's that. There you go. So this is an exciting story, not only because it's a New York story,
yeah,
but the implications of it is that there's less possibility in the world we live in now for people to get away with things publicly, specifically in this case, the police.
Yeah.
Is that when you have an event, you know, we went down to the protest, Pashman and I went down. It was quite an amazing show of force in terms of you know, people protesting the war, people protesting Republican convention being in this city. It was fairly peaceful. Certainly there were not any tragic, you know, exhibits of force on behalf of the New York police force. There was no one killed, but apparently they took a lot of people into custody. Over 90% of the cases have been dismissed, but some of them that were misrepresented, and the police have been called because everybody has a video camera now. There were several different versions of the tapes.
Now, there were in total 1,806 people arrested during the Republican National Convention. Many of them said that they were just folks who were trying to get to a certain place and got swept up during the course of protests. And it was interesting, Mark, you mentioned a bike earlier. A lot of the protests were, in fact, bicycle protests. Again, against the convention being held here in New York. Now, the New York City Police Department has a long and many say sad history in terms of dealing with protest. I know because I was involved in a protest down on Wall Street 35 years ago when the NYPD would wade in and just swing on anybody that they thought was protesting against the United States. And at that time, it was against the Vietnam War. What they did at the beginning of the convention was to say essentially, look, if you want to protest peacefully, the police are not going to mess with you, but if you violate the law, we're going to lock you up. So a lot of people bought into that frame on the part of the NYPD. Now, I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, I've known the police commissioner, Ray Kelly, for a while. I know him to be a pretty stand-up guy in the most general sense. But the problem is the commissioner is one thing. The cop on the street is something again. And what you saw happening in and during the Republican convention was a string of arrests that apparently were not justified to begin with, and were also, as you very correctly point out, videotaped. Now, what happened was that many of these videotapes found their way into the hands of the Manhattan DA's office, which were supposed to, that office is supposed to prosecute these arrests. And in many cases, the charges were dropped immediately because what the police said happened and what the videotape showed happening were completely different. In one instance, there was a situation where a police officer swore that they had to carry this guy down the steps of the New York Public Library kicking and screaming, and then somebody produces a videotape that shows him walking down the steps.
Yeah, just walking down and complying.
And complying, yeah. There was another instance where they arrested a guy down on the Lower East Side, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street, for people who know New York City. This is the Lower East Side of Manhattan, a hotbed of protest anyway. But they were down there protesting, and this guy said that he was just trying to get some sushi. He lived in the neighborhood. He was trying to get on his way home after buying some cheap sushi.
And he had his bike with him, and he was walking his bike.
Yes. And they said that he violently resisted arrest. This is what the police were going to court saying. And the fact is, the videotape showed that he was not, just walking down the street. Now, what's even more odious about this is that some of the tape that came into the hands of Manhattan prosecutors, in some cases made by the police, had been edited so that the parts that contradicted the police version...
Yeah, the moments at arrest.
Yeah, yeah, weren't there anymore.
Yeah, it was just an editorial choice. It was a coincidence.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they had to, I guess, what, edit down for quality control purposes?
Yeah, well, why the hell would they go to that, you know, outside of the fact, what were they really protecting? I mean, if I'm going to give the cop, even for a second, which is not like me, going to give the cop the benefit of the doubt in the sense that, you know, maybe they arrested a lot of people, maybe they had the wrong guy in mind, why would they go out, as opposed to just admit the mistake because, you know, there were so many people that they roughed up or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would they go to the extent to editing the tape when they know that it's only going to, you know, it's going to come back in their face? I mean, it's just demonic that you can't just say, look, you know, we lied. We were wrong. Moving on, you know, or whatever. I'm sorry. Or, you know, why wouldn't they not do that?
Because in this instance, I think that the police wanted to make a statement about how they handled the protest. I think the police department generally wanted to say, look, we were tough, but we were fair. And what these videotapes are starting to show, and the facts of the matter, were 91% of the 1,600 cases that have been brought so far have resulted in charges either being dropped or people being acquitted. Suddenly there's a different picture of the police department.
They weren't tough or fair.
No, they were not tough or fair. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them, went beyond the pale either to inflate arrest statistics or, more importantly, to have a chilling effect on other protests. Remember, these protests took place over a week's period when the convention was here, and I think one of the things the police wanted to do was minimize the impact of the protests so that if on Monday they arrest a bunch of people that they say were violating the law, then maybe people who might have been thinking about violating the law on Wednesday or Thursday would think twice.
So that was the plan. Was it at the first day of the convention, let's start rounding people up. Let's just start putting as many people in jail as possible for whatever reason. And do it as safely as possible, because this is really just meant to initiate a certain theme in terms of terror. That, you know, we want to scare these people into thinking that they will go to jail if they do anything.
Well, yeah, and see, the problem was somebody apparently forgot to tell the Manhattan DA's office. Because now, even one of Robert Morgenthau, he's the Manhattan DA, one of his spokespeople said that the material in one of the videotapes that had been edited was cut by the prosecutor. And they said that, hey, that was our mistake. But the other part of this is that in where there is videotape that contradicts police testimony, the Manhattan DA, they're dropping these charges wholesale. They don't want to go through a trial and get embarrassed and have police officers. In one instance, in the public library situation, the cop that had made all these allegations about having to carry the guy off, he was nowhere in the video.
See, that's some scary stuff. So that now, just because they're dropping all charges, that doesn't mean they should be let off of re-editing evidence.
No, somebody needs to investigate the conduct of the people that were involved in this.
Yes.
As far up as that may go. And again, you know, I know Commissioner Kelly. I don't think he would sanction this as a matter of course, but it happened on his watch, and somebody has got to make sure that this sort of thing, that peaceful protest, is not obstructed like this again. This is New York. This is not
they already figured out a way to cordon off the city so that you're basically impenned.
Yeah.
There's only certain few blocks you can walk, or if it's just a standing protest, you're a few blocks away, and you're literally in a corral that is enforced by, you know, hundreds of police officers on all sides.
Well, that was Rudy Giuliani's way of dealing with these kinds of things. I can remember there were some protests in Harlem, and they made people walk like five blocks away from the train station to get to the train station. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, they corral you into a protest area / internment camp.
Yeah.
We could set up an emergency internment camp overnight to accommodate the protesters. So they don't have the same effect, either visually or even as somebody who is there. It's not, you know, it doesn't give you that freedom of speech thing, that freedom of civil disobedience thing.
And it also doesn't give you the feeling that you're not alone. You know, when you have critical mass in a protest, Mark, and I know this because I've been in a bunch of them, the more people you have, and I'm talking about nonviolent protests now, I'm not talking about people, throwing rocks through windows, but the more people you have, the more you start to feel that your cause is just. I've been in Central Park in a Soweto protest, it was 250,000 people. And it made people feel as though this was just, This was right, and it needed to be done. And there's no reason in the world why the police department should obstruct people who want to legally protest.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely crazy.
It is, and I hope that something is looked into, because it's just, you know, to alter evidence.
Yeah, and by the way, congratulations to Jim Dwyer, who I know, who's a Times reporter that really kind of wrote this piece. It's
okay.
In today's Times.
Well, we're going to come back. Todd Solondz is going to be with us. Some people like him, some people hate him, but he makes everyone a little uncomfortable. You know, and I'm looking forward to meeting him and talk to him about his films, because I am, you know, I'm on the fence with some of it, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him. We'll be back with Todd Solondz after this on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
And being afraid of life and being afraid of death. Where the hell does that leave you?
The Mike Molloy Show on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. In a few moments, we will be talking to Todd Solondz. But right now, you know, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now, on the phone, once again, is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. The Lord giveth, activist judges taketh away.
Uh-huh.
Judiciary's run amok.
Yeah.
Run amok.
Look, buddy, you haven't even talked. You know, I've been talking to you for weeks now. I haven't heard anything about Tom DeLay yet.
It's been too painful for me, Mark.
Oh. Okay.
Democrats couldn't win at the ballot box, so months later they're waging an irresponsible media campaign against that poor,
poor man.
Little Tom.
Come on.
He's our Job.
Oh, come on. No.
Trials and tribulations.
No.
Positively Old Testament.
No. Sad Little Tom. They call him the Hammer. Why would they call him the Hammer? He's not a sad man.
Okay, Mark, I have a 400-pound gardener who trims my hedges, and you know what we call him?
No, I don't.
Tiny. You see, Tom DeLay calling him the Hammer is called irony.
Uh-huh.
It's a device used in comedy.
Okay.
You try it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Poor little okay. Hammer.
So he's an innocent victim. Is that it? An innocent victim.
The liberal media has persecuted him so much. I had a barbecue at my house to raise money for his legal defense fund. We stuck Ted Kennedy on a spit, slow roasted him, and smeared him with KC masterpiece.
God.
Good eating.
Come on.
I'm kidding, Mark. We did not eat Ted Kennedy.
Dude, how can you defend? I know you didn't eat Ted Kennedy. It's hilarious. How can you defend Tom DeLay? How? Do you even know what he's done, man?
I know he was prepared to put food in his mouth, chew it up, and regurgitate it into Terri Schiavo's feeding tube just to save her
life. Oh, my God.
Just like a mother robin would do for her little
baby. Oh, my God. You're demented.
Why do you people hate sacrifice?
Tom DeLay offered political favors in exchange for support on the Medicare bill. He improperly involved a federal agent in a Texas partisan matter. He illegally laundered corporate funds to assist a state political campaign. He used the children's charity as a personal political fund. He solicited campaign contributions in return for legislative favors. I mean, come on. He took four separate trips costing about $250,000 paid for by lobbyists. He used his political action and campaign committees to funnel more than $500,000 to his wife and daughter for their work on his, supposedly on his campaign. And he threatened the judges who ruled on the Schiavo case. Come on.
I'm waiting for the park where he broke the rules. Did he fornicate with a fat intern in the Oval Office? Something terrible like that?
He's a criminal, Lawton.
Mark, Tom's just playing political hardball. And if y'all didn't bring your catcher's mitt, well, that's not my fault, is it? I guess if I was that ill-prepared, I'd be upset, too.
Lawton, he's going down.
Hardball.
Even Republicans are going after him now. He's overplayed his hand, and now even his own party doesn't want to be associated with him anymore. He's just a cheap bully and a blowhard and a crook, Lawton, and his crimes are going to come down hard on the Republicans in next year's elections. Oh, God. What?
No one came to my barbecue.
Oh, God.
I lied. My friend said, Tom DeLay's a crook and you're an idiot to try to raise money.
Yeah.
For
all right.
I bought balloons.
Oh,
I hired
God.
A clown.
Oh,
200
God.
Pounds of beautiful pork cutlets gone to waste.
All right.
Gone
okay.
to waste.
Okay.
No
right.
one likes
right.
me. I had a same Newt Gingrich barbecue a few years back and no one came to that either.
All right. Okay.
Pork cutlets.
All right. Take it easy. Just take it easy. All right. I hate when I have to walk
Mark,
you through this crap.
Mark,
what?
If I have another barbecue, will you come? Please.
All right. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know.
I'll grill some vegetables for you. No meat. Just vegetables. Just
okay, all right. Well, I'll come. I'll come if you stop crying.
You will?
Okay, yes. Wow. Whoa.
President Tom DeLay.
Oh, my
That's
God.
What's going to happen after all this blows over.
I'm a sucker.
President Tom Two-Terms Madman DeLay. What a... Happy day.
All right. Goodbye.
Here he comes.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you.
All right.
Deal with it.
All right. All right. Yeah, I fall for it every time, don't I? So our guest in studio right now is the screenwriter and director of the film Welcome to the Dollhouse. He also Happiness and Storytelling. His newest film is called Palindromes, which I saw last week. Good morning, Todd Solondz. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to be here.
I'm so happy you're here because I have some questions. I'd like to talk to you about your films. I did Welcome to the Dollhouse. I love it. Love that film. I saw Happiness. I liked most of it. And now I'm halfway through Storytelling, which I rented, and you can tell me how it ends or not. I saw Palindromes last week. Your films always I find very engaging, and they make me uncomfortable, but I think I'm of the same ilk as you. I find a great celebration in sadness. Do you?
Well, they're all sad comedies, and certainly this is the saddest one of all. At heart, it's a simple story of a young girl she's 13 years old, and she wants to be a mom. She wants to have a baby, and what does that mean but that it's a kind of a quest for unconditional love that she senses she's not getting elsewhere. She imagines a baby will provide that, but of course that's something of illusion. And the story, of course, is thrust into motion by this question, what do you do, in fact, if your daughter comes home, she's 13 years old, and she's pregnant. And not only pregnant, but she wants to keep the baby. It's something of an impossible dilemma. For many people, I think something of a lose-lose proposition.
Ellen Barkin plays the mother and makes an interesting choice as sort of a middle-class, liberal, seemingly Jewish mother. You know, she says that we have to get rid of this baby at all costs.
It's a very tricky situation, something of a crucible to test the moral fiber of her character, in fact. And some people think she's a terrible mother. Others think she's a sensible one, and I think that's reflective, of course, of one's perhaps one's political orientation.
Well, I don't want to give too much of the film away because I do want people to experience it. But the odd thing about the film, I think most people are talking about or will talk about, is that you chose to use 8 different actors of various races, sizes, genders to play this one part throughout the film. Now, I personally thought that the story was strong enough and interesting enough to be, you know, one actress, and I sort of found myself craving that. Because I found the choice that you made a little distracting but interesting, and I'd like to know why you chose to do that.
Well, with everything you embark on, you always try and find a new direction to go at things from another angle. I had a made Welcome to the Dollhouse, which had an 11-year-old girl protagonist, and I didn't feel comfortable making another movie with a protagonist of... this one's 13, but it was a little too close, and I found this concept very exciting and freeing for me. It's fresh. It is a radical conceit, of course, I acknowledge, but reason alone, it makes it that much more charged for me. The audience may be somewhat disoriented or confused at first, but I think at a certain point it kicks in. People get it. There's one character with a number of people playing her, and in some sense that the hope is that the cumulative effect would be greater than had it been but one actress. That here you have 8 people playing this part. It could have been 80. In a sense, any one of us are forced to acknowledge how, in fact, we could each of us play some episode in this young innocent's life.
You know, when you do a film like this that really has questions about abortion in it, you know that you're going to hear from one or both sides of the divide here. Apparently, both sides don't like the movie. Did you set out to make a film that was going to anger both camps here?
Well, 2 points. I'm not sure that you can say this is a factual statement that both sides. That depends, really. There are all sides, and people from both sides as well take to the film. It's not uniformly, in any sense, repudiated. The sides, of course, it's an irreconcilable issue. I accept that, and I'm not out to convert anyone to one side or the other. It's rather the idea is to explore the moral dimension, the moral consequences of what it means, in fact, to take one of these positions. One thing, in a sense, to check off the box and say one is anti-war and pro-gay marriage, pro-gun control, etc. It's another also to fully absorb and investigate the moral dimension. Now, it's as I say, it's not to convert, but to fully explore this. Here you have this character. Everything's turned topsy-turvy when the daughter comes in and she's pregnant. All of a sudden, everything has to be re-examined. The movie's out to try to get the audience to provoke them into re-examining some of their preconceptions, the myths that we live by. Certainly, I don't think anyone could argue that this is a pro-choice movie, anyone more than one could argue it's a pro-life movie. Those are reductive arguments. If anything, I suppose you could call it an anti-choice movie, if in fact, philosophically speaking, you in fact believe in the possibility of choice.
Mm. Now, I saw an interview that you did with Salon where you said you don't really like the production aspect of movie making a great deal. What bothers you about it?
Well, it's not fun for me personally. I think others may take to the rigor, the military-like aspect of production. It doesn't suit my personality. It's very assaultive.
How so? How is it assaultive?
Oh, you plan things from day one. For example, a sunny day you need, and then you need the actress to look very beautiful. And of course, the first day it's raining, and the actress has, let's say, a big, a terrible blemish on her face, and that no makeup can somehow disguise. So you have to deal with these realities. And then if you're lucky, you say, oh my God, rain! I never thought of that's better than sunshine. And then it turns out to be a good thing. But unfortunately, in my experience, they tend to be compromises that you have to just live with.
We're talking to Todd Solondz. We'll talk to him some more. I want to talk a little bit about happiness and storytelling. So stay with us. It's very interesting. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
You wait for 30 days. Call now. 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
You're scaring me.
It's Morning Tradition on Air America Radio. We're going to land this thing here. Riley's looking to be like, what the hell is this?
No, you know what it was? I have a thing about songs where they take three notes to phrase one word. Of.
Yeah.
Just drives me nuts.
Well, this is called This Is the Way That Jesus Made Us. It's the Sunshine Singers, which are featured. Is that a fictional group that you made up? It's in the movie Palindromes. We're talking to Todd Solondz. And who are these kids? Is this real?
No, they are fictional, just like the monkeys are.
Are you looking to build a business out of these kids?
I'm afraid I'm not much of a businessman at this. But they were put together, all sorts of children, some with disabilities, some without, who form a Christian singing group. And in a sense, this song that you were just playing, This Is the Way Jesus Made Us, and in a sense, that underlies something. There's a double edge here, because of course, those who sing this song have one thing in mind, but I don't know if that means they also, Jesus also made us, he may have made us, some of us, blind, he may have made some of us gay, he may have made us even a pedophile, you know, according to this philosophy, something of the movie does open up questions of choice and free will, but I don't want to that burden you with.
No. It's weird that you're talking about that, because when I saw the film, I didn't quite put all that together. There's a lot to think about in the film, in Palindrome certainly, and in any of your films. I'm watching storytelling. It's very provocative in terms of race, and then the second story is very provocative in terms of art and filmmaking, and happiness is provocative on many levels. But because you actually have a pedophile who's a very sympathetic character in Happiness. Now, what is it about that? What are you looking for in humanity? What is it that reveals humanity to you that you choose to create these characters that are incredibly compromised, either morally or physically, in order to embrace this stuff?
Well, I think, first of all, I probably, in some sense, I'm most drawn and most moved by those who are most outcast, those who are most lost, those most perhaps even reviled. That my heart goes most out to those most marginalized. That said, but it's easy enough to say one loves humanity, but people who often say that tend to say we love humanity except for...
Conditional. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That it's a lot more difficult, but I think richer if one is able to embrace a greater swath, so to speak, that to accept those others as well as oneself, what with all one's flaws and failings, is in fact, I think, a higher thing to do.
I was mad at you actually after I saw Happiness a little bit. It took me a while to try to figure out why. There was a moment in the film where, as much as I liked the film, there was one of the characters crossed the line for me where I thought that is he making these characters to hurt them? To mock them, to put them through the mill, because there's something very highly charged. If you have any of that in yourself, if you are vulnerable or you have felt victimized in any way, these characters are really going to reach in and grab you, most of your characters. And there was a moment there where I just thought, he just made this to hurt this guy. He made this guy to hurt him.
I'm not sure which moment you're talking about.
Well, there's a couple of moments. I felt that, Philip Seymour Hoffman was a tragically obsessed alcoholic who was a chronic masturbator and a guy who made sex phone calls to anonymous people, and the Mannheim character. I didn't understand why she had to be a killer, and I didn't understand, ultimately why Philip Seymour Hoffman had to, why the pain was never lifted, I guess, and that's my own problem.
Well, see, I think that, there are different, ways of looking at this. I don't quite see it all as bleakly as you. I think one of the great moments, beautiful, poetic moments, really, is the fact that these two characters are so tormented and pained find each other ultimately in a way that is not that is not about sex, but
yeah,
about a kind of emotional, spiritual kind of communion takes place, in which they end up together in bed in a clearly non-sexual way.
Yeah, I've grown to accept it. I mean, I'm no longer mad at you. It took me a long time to integrate that film and that part of that film into my heart, but I do.
I would even actually argue with you that certainly Bill Maplewood, the psychiatrist slash pedophile, is not exactly sympathetic. I would never use that word to describe him. I couldn't characterize anyone who raped children as sympathetic. What I do, however, say is that there is, as painful as it may be to acknowledge, there is a human soul there, living and breathing. That is what is most troubling. That is what is most unsettling. And what makes it tragic is that, in fact, he is a great father who loves his son and family. And that is what is most painful of all.
Okay. I'm glad we clarified that. Todd Solondz, thank you for being with us. The new film, Palindrome, opens... When, on Monday?
It opens tomorrow in New York and Los Angeles.
And around the country as the weeks go by and people get more excited, angered, or whatnot. I guess on some level it's definitely going to raise some
fire.
It's going to be exciting. Okay, thank you for joining us, Todd.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Thank you.
Okay, there's the sound of the fax machine. It's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down, folks. Here are your marching orders. One, if someone mentions the Michael Jackson trial, cock one eyebrow disdainfully and say, "Who?" Two, April is garden month. Take good care of the Otpay ant play in your acement bay. Three, broaden your sources of news by reading items spray-painted on turnpike overpasses. For instance, did you know that CC rules or that Myron has a big one? Four, as always, monitor the next episode of the Fox TV show 24 for anti-Islamic messages. So far, they're up to 162. Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. You know who else had a mustache besides Bolton? Hitler, man. Hitler. Wake up, sheeple. Mustache equals lies. Okay, that's it for today,
That's it for today, but you know who we got tomorrow?
Who?
And this is going to be fun.
Oh,
Charles Barkley, one of the 50 greatest basketball players of all time. He's written a new book, and it's not about basketball. It's about race. It's about gender issues. It's about the whole nine yards. We talk with him about all of it. So that is going to be on the table for tomorrow. Be listening, folks. Maren, good show today.
You too, Riley. Take it easy.
All right. This is Air America Radio.